Have you noticed that even though we live in a time of extreme affluence, comfort, and where technology has made our life so much easier, still unhappiness, anxiety, and depression is on the rise? What is going on? Why is it so difficult to stay happy when we do experience, say, a new purchase or a new relationship or a new job or a promotion? We get a spike in our happiness and then we return to baseline or even lower than baseline. But even worse than that, why is our baseline happiness shifting lower and lower? In today's episode, I'm going to share with you three techniques to level out this hedonic cycle to keep you happier for longer. Two that are designed by psychologists to help with hedonic adaptation, and the third is a lesson that I learned from my grandmother, Rose. Yes, my grandmother. I'm Sam McCool, and welcome to A Higher Branch. Hello, and welcome to another episode of A Higher Branch. If you are new, hit that subscribe button and the notifications bell so you don't miss any future episodes. And I have quite a bit coming up, especially in the new year, to help you upgrade your life. Okay, well, let's kick off today's episode. We are going to discuss hedonic adaptation. And I'm going to take you through three techniques. And let me tell you, the most powerful one is the third technique that I learned from my grandmother. Now, have you noticed when you buy something new, what happens? You get this bump in your happiness. I mean, that's why they call it retail therapy, right? So you're sitting at baseline, and most of us are cruising around at baseline happiness. And when we buy something new, it could be a new bag, new shoes, new car, new home, or we meet a new friend, try a new restaurant. Anything that's novel, we get this surge in our happiness. But after a while, what happens? And depending on what it is that you've acquired, it's usually a material thing, right? If it's something small, then it may take a day for you to then return to baseline. If I buy a new pair of shoes, or even the last time I bought a car, I remember every time I'd go down to the garage, see the car, big smile on my face, get in, start it up, feel amazing. Now I get into the same car, and I'm completely numb to the experience. It's just a car. What is it about human psychology that we get this surge and then we come back to baseline? In psychology, they call this hedonic adaptation. So the idea is that no matter how good or bad something makes us feel over time, if it's good, we lose the thrill. And if it's bad, we lose the sadness. And then we return to an emotional baseline. So this adaptation is actually for our benefit because it works for us during periods of hardship, of war, for example, or economic hardship, or injury, or broken relationship. Your happiness dips, but hedonic adaptation is such that we lift back up to baseline. Because if we didn't return to baseline, we would stay at the bottom of the curve, and that unhappiness then turns into systemic depression. That is why people get depressed, because they stay below that baseline for too long. And they fire that part of the brain associated with depression, which is normally dormant. And if it stays fired for too long, it stays on and it turns systemic. But what is happening now in the Western world? We are not going through periods of war or hardship. I mean, I know there are people that are struggling out there, but all in all, generally speaking, throughout human history, we have never had it so good. We can regulate our air temperature. We can get from A to B quicker than ever before. We have phones where we can talk to anyone or share content with anyone throughout the world. And food is abundant. Anxiety and depression is still rising. And it's rising in the most affluent countries. This is a huge problem. And the three techniques I'm going to share with you today will help you overcome that problem or stop you from falling into that hedonic treadmill trap. And let me tell you, the problem is not going to go away on its own. It's actually getting worse because technology is going at leaps and bounds and it's making pleasurable things so accessible. Relationships are only a swipe away. So too is our favorite restaurant. You know, we have luxury cars, fine foods, the latest in computers, phones. I mean, the list of comforts and pleasures is growing year on year at such a fast pace. And human psychology is not adapting quick enough to deal with this comfort crisis. We are losing appreciation for these everyday comforts, for everyday foods, for people, and even for intimacy in relationships. People who stray in a relationship are a product of hedonic adaptation because they lose the thrill and they go chasing it elsewhere. People who binge on food or television or alcohol or gambling or even drugs are chasing to fill that same emotional gap. So why do we have this gap that we need to fill? And why is the chase making us unhappier and unhappier, especially when we achieve those comforts that I just talked about? I know some people that are trying to ride that wave, right? Where when they buy something and their happiness soars and they're at the top of that hedonic curve, and then their happiness starts to dip again. Because whatever they bought, the clothes, the shoes, the bags, the watch, the car, whatever it is, they lose interest in it. And that's completely normal, right? The thrill has gone and their unhappiness is now dipping again. What do? Bang, they go out shopping again. They'll buy the next thing and the next thing. So it's almost like the curve is going through this bipolar moment where people are trying to redline their happiness to stay at the peak of the curve. And the moment it drops a bit, bang, they go out and buy something new. It goes back up. The problem is the more and more we buy, the less the thrill is and our baseline is dropping lower. So the overall trend in happiness on that hedonic adaptation graph is it's a downward trend. So clearly materialism, consumerism, and buying things that make us happy or doing things that make us happy are short-lived. We all don't have enough resources to keep buying things and doing things to keep us in that high state, right? I call it a high state because it's like a drug addiction. People who are addicted to drugs will try marijuana first, and then if it stops giving them the thrill, then they go chasing to the next level. People end up as heroin addicts, and you think, how did they end up with something so hard? It's because the other stuff they were taking didn't deliver the same thrill. It is exactly the same phenomena. Especially in today's world, when we are exposed to so much, we're in a comparison culture stage in humanity where we see so much and we're just comparing ourselves regularly to people that have what seems infinite resources to buy whatever they want. And then we think, well, I'll be happy if I have what he or she has. In reality, some of the most miserable people on earth have the most resources because they've realized that, hey, I've achieved my success, I've have the money in the bank, but I'm not feeling fulfilled. Most of my clients that I've coached in the past, that I've mentored, actually fit into this category. You wouldn't believe it, right? But here's the thing, the enemy is not hedonic adaptation. It's a very useful evolutionary survival mechanism, or creationary, whatever your beliefs are. Much in the same way we have the fight or flight mechanism, right? It is a useful survival mechanism. So the enemy is not that. The enemy is hedonism itself and the lack of control we have over our appetites. Psychologists use two tools for hedonic adaptation. The first technique involves, you guessed it, practicing gratitude. We're all familiar with that. It's become such a cliche. Practicing gratitude is really to be mindful and appreciate all the things that you have and to give thanks for, right? So how does this help hedonism or controlling that appetite? Well, in my experience, it only helps marginally because only marginally when it comes to materialism. Let me explain. Is it okay, for example, to overindulge just because we are grateful? Being mindful enough to stop and feel gratitude for an overindulgence does not make it any less of an overindulgence. And it doesn't teach you self-control. So you can buy something that you absolutely love and remind yourself every day of how grateful you are to have it. But the emotion of feeling grateful itself will disappear. And you can say it as much as you like, but you're not going to feel gratitude in your heart for something that is material. I promise you, you're not going to feel it. You can say it, you're not going to feel it. That's why when I teach gratitude, I say you've got to be grateful for the things that can't be taken away from you. Your qualities, for example, your potential. In my experience, practicing gratitude is good for appreciating and reminding yourself to be thankful for the people in your life. Because hedonism doesn't just apply to material things. Hedonism will also apply to friends that you are thrilled to connect with and meet and go out with. But over time, especially if you see this friend every day, the thrill goes, right? And your happiness level that you felt when you first met will slowly disappear. And that's normal. What is not normal is you feeling unhappy about being in that neutral state. Okay, I hope that makes sense. Let's move on to the second technique that psychologists use to keep your happiness above baseline, and that is to practice variety. They tell us, try a different routine. If something's becoming really mundane, boring, you want novelty, right? Eat vanilla ice cream instead of chocolate. Read a book instead of watching TV. Sign up to a different gym. Go to a different holiday destination. Try a macchiato instead of a cappuccino. Now, I think novelty is good. I think it keeps you young because it keeps you on the edge of new things, and that keeps you young because when you are living on the edge and trying new things, you're outside of your comfort zone. It's a state where you are on the edge of stress, but you've heard me say it before, stress is actually positive and good for you at a certain level. I've talked about this novelty. I've talked about novelty in the past and how it helps you stay engaged and in the moment. But I feel that this technique, if it's not practiced correctly, can actually make matters worse by feeding hedonistic tendencies. For example, when it comes to retail therapy, chasing novelty makes us go to shopping malls and mindlessly walking around, right? In that state, we're most vulnerable to buying stuff that makes us happy in the short term, but tomorrow or the day after, it just sits there collecting dust at the expense of your bank account, by the way. What about the person in a long-term relationship? Telling them to look for novelty can translate into cheating on their partner as they look for that new thrill. You see this phenomenon play out also in the job market, right? People are turning over jobs regularly in search of that new thrill. They leave great jobs and a great team and a great culture to chase the next exciting job. And advertisers and recruiters play on this. They convince you that happiness is in the next job. But the latest stats don't lie. They tell us that 87% of people in the Western world are dissatisfied with their job. 87%. So, novelty is not the answer, right? What you need to do is stop it altogether and not be in constant search of variety to the point that you are trying to stay at the top of that hedonic adaptation curve. I don't believe that variety as a technique really levels out the curve and makes you feel any better. I don't think it shifts the baseline back up because you can end up hating anything, even the thing or the people you love so much, if you get too much of it. Which leads me now to the third technique and really what I wanted to share with you today, because I know this technique works and I've been practicing it for many years. And I've said it before, I don't share anything with you that I don't personally live by. Because I was raised that way. I spent 3 months every year with my grandmother in the summer holidays in a village on the base of Mount Lebanon, tiny village with only 600 people. And my grandmother practiced this technique all the time, and I paid attention, careful attention, and I developed the same habit. And I promise you this will revolutionize your outlook and lift your happiness baseline. She taught me about fasting. Fasting from pleasures. Now, we know that fasting from food is good for our body, right? There's been so much research. The medical profession all agree on one thing, fasting is good for you. But no one ever tells us how to fast for cognitive health, not just physical health. You see, fasting from pleasurable things lifts the baseline because it makes us appreciate what we have for much longer. Then we don't become a slave to material things. We don't become a slave to those hedonic desires. I say it's a much more effective technique because it directly strengthens our ability to control our appetite for all manner of desires and pleasures. It goes deeper than just practicing variety, and it forces us into a state of gratitude, of real gratitude, of true gratitude. Because when we fast from the things that we love, we are turning off the hedonic switch in our brains, which makes us want more and more, and which makes us appreciate the things in our life less and less. So now I'm going to give you a few examples of how to practice fasting and fasting from pleasures. And at the end of this podcast, I suggest you write your own list down in your journal, because we all have our own hedonic tendencies. So for me, you can fast from your favorite food, for example. I mentioned chocolate or coffee. Or you can fast from your favorite restaurant. Or you can fast from your favorite song or your favorite artist. Or you can fast from your clothes, even your shoes or your bags, by not using them so much. When you see them, you resist that temptation by saying, well, I love you so much, but I'm not going to wear it today. I'm going to wear something else. I said earlier there is an epidemic of disengagement from work, and that 87% of people worldwide are disengaged at work. I'm thinking seriously how, like, we live in the most amazing times in human history, as I said. Our offices are so comfortable. Some are fitted out with gyms or have massage therapists. The latest technology makes work so fast and easy. Like, work conditions cannot be any better. So it can't be those things. It's simply because people are working too many long hours, and you can end up hating your job just like anything if you get too much of it. So the problem is not the job, it's you. I was guilty of this many times in the past because I'm a workaholic, and I stayed at work for many long hours, and I started hating the job that I loved until I started fasting from work. What about Uber Eats? I love Uber Eats, but I frequently fast from it, where I just say, I'm not going to order, I'm going to go buy groceries and cook. So the next time I order Uber Eats, guess what? I'm so grateful for it, and it reminds me not to take it for granted. What about your partner? My wife and I, we take breaks from each other. She might go away for a weekend with her friends, or she may visit her parents for the day. And let me tell you, when we see each other again, we are just so happy. The same goes with your friends. I have some friends that I love dearly, and just seeing them brings a smile to my face, and they make me laugh and we hang out. But I deliberately don't see them all the time, because I can tell when I see them all the time what happens. That hedonic adaptation kicks in and you don't appreciate them as much. What about your car? How do you fast from your car? Well, I take public transport sometimes, or I'll walk. Sometimes I'll walk an hour just to drive it home to my, you know, inner mental talk that, hey, don't take your car for granted. Don't take transport for granted. Now, there's so many more examples I'm sure you can think of in your own life, even little things like, you know, your favorite pen, for example, your favorite beverage. There's just so many things when we think about it, you know, we can fast from. And it's things that you absolutely love. And when you make a conscious effort daily or weekly or monthly to fast from it, I promise you, you're going to level out this yo-yo effect of, you know, hedonic adaptation, and you will avoid your baseline happiness drifting lower and lower, which is what's happening, sadly, in the Western world. You know, it just occurred to me that fasting from pleasure to improve our mental health and our emotional well-being isn't just a technique that is useful when it comes to human psychology. It's a cue from all religions. You know, why do they have fasting as a religious practice? There must be a wisdom in that. You know, I was raised as a Catholic, and, you know, the period before Easter called Lent is a time to fast from either meat or something you love. My grandmother explained it to me, and she said, Sam, it's not just about fasting from food or from meat or from animal products. It's about fasting from your favorite things that you love dearly in life. And that was a beautiful lesson that I learned from her, and I've kept into my adult life. You know, it's amazing how a lot of principles come from various religions. Now, if you're an atheist and you're listening to this, I completely respect that. And that's why I share this technique more as of a universal practice, because whether we are religious or not, the same principles apply. We cannot continue down this path of chasing our desires to the detriment of our happiness. We cannot be happy if we continuously consume things and going after new thrills in a hedonistic fashion. And I promise you that fasting from things in the eight areas of life will transform it. It will put you in control and you don't become a slave to your desires. Fasting, at the end of the day, is about controlling your desires. It's about being stoic. When you fast from your pleasures, you will find that your health improves, your relationships, and even your bank balance. Okay, I hope I've given you some food for thought. If you learned anything from this and know someone else that can benefit, please share it with them. You can also share it on social media and search and tag me in it, Sam McCool, or you can search for us under A Higher Branch. And I'm on a mission to help as many people as possible, so I hope you go along this journey with me and become an ambassador. On that note, thank you for listening today. And as always, every morning is the dawn of a new day and your opportunity to hit the reset button and start from scratch. Until next time, live consciously, my friends.